seventh grade. We moved a lot when I was growing up, but we moved into this new place, and so we're going to start a new school, and that comes with, like, for me, that was like 90% nervousness, 10% excitement. I mean, it's kind of exciting that you can start over and that you can, you know, have a fresh start and all that kind of stuff. There's also the nervousness there. So that first day of school comes around, and I get on the bus, and everybody's like scowling at me. I'm new here, this is my first day, what's going on? And I came to find out that everybody hated my guts because I moved into to Billy's house. And Billy was my same age, and I moved into his house, which meant that he had to leave, and I was the reason that he left, apparently. But everybody hated my, like, this is your new start, you know? And you know how that stuff works. Like, as soon as people start thinking that you are terrible, and you're, then it's just hard to, you know, and middle school is kind of this weird, small little world where, you know, if your first day you're stuck at the bottom of the totem pole, then life is really terrible for a while. And I was really upset about this. This was compared to some things, it's pretty small potatoes. But like, in that little period of my life, that was some serious stuff. Like, God, help me with this. This is terrible. What did I do to deserve this? This is a dark moment of my life. You know, everybody hates me, and it's not my fault. I don't even know this Billy kid. I just felt hopeless, you know. All of us, in big ways and in small ways, so many times we talk about the big stuff, you know. But this, we also feel kind of similar things in smaller ways, too. But in big ways and small ways, we go through stuff, maybe even we're going through stuff now, that we feel are kind of hopeless. Maybe it's divorce. Maybe it's an unwanted pregnancy. Maybe it's a job loss, or somebody dies, or just any number of things that happen in life that we feel like is just hopeless. In those moments we tend to despair, and we tend to get angry, when we kind of lose ourselves and feel like this bad thing, whatever this hopeless situation is having the last word, you know, and feel weighted down by that thing. So in those moments, if you're going through that now, or you can remember one of those, even if it's something like moving into Billy's house, then you can kind of understand a little bit of what our reading was about today. There's this. It was written to this group of people. This man named John wrote the book of Revelation to this group of people who were Christians right after Jesus' resurrection. They became Christians pretty soon after that, and they started churches. And these people were being persecuted because they were Christians. At any moment they could opt out of this after being Christians, and they were being persecuted because. As Christians, they wouldn't worship Caesar. And for most pagans, people that were not Christians, it wasn't a big deal because they could worship or offer sacrifices to any god. So they had a belief that there was a lot of different kinds of gods. And so lighting incense and worshiping Caesar as God wasn't really that big of a deal. But for Christians that believe that there is one God, that was a big deal. And that's turning their back on God. And so then to worship Caesar was really wrong. And the rest of the world saw this as treason. So like saying, that's fine for you to be in America, and I don't really care about America, and I don't love it, and I don't, you know. And that just really gets under people's skin, and especially in Rome, you know, like... that was a big deal. So to have your citizenship and to have your rights, you had to do this. And so this meant they had no rights, that in most cases that people could kill them. You didn't have to do business with them and a lot, and you could take their stuff. Sometimes you could do whatever you wanted to them because they have no rights. And being seen as an underclass kind of people, that people were angry at them. And they thought that they were just kind of a blight on the city. Anything bad that happens, oh, well, the reason for that is the gods are angry at us because these Christians are here. So let's do bad things to these people and get them out of here. And So these people were under this huge amount of pressure. They were being persecuted. And John is writing this letter to them to encourage them to stand firm in their faith and to not give up. Because you know they had to be thinking, you know, this. I love Jesus and I love God, but this is a hard road. And maybe the bad stuff is winning. Maybe wrong is winning. Maybe the bad things of this world are winning. And those are going to be the things that have the final say. So a couple things about the book of Revelation. This is a kind of letter, a kind of writing called, it's called an apocalypse. And an apocalypse is like, it's a genre like science fiction or fiction or nonfiction or whatever. It's a genre of writing. It's a type of writing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So we don't have it now. People don't write apocalypses very much now, but they did back then. And what they were, it's a form of writing where you give people encouragement and strength for the present circumstances by giving them a vision for the future. Does that make sense? Encouragement and strength to deal with their current circumstances by giving them a vision of the future. And that's what John was doing. And so like what these people were dealing with, they were feeling like the world is the bad stuff is winning. And so what happens in Revelation, the world actually, people wonder, like, how is the world going to come to an end? And they read Revelation and they wonder. And it's really tricky. And one of the reasons is because Revelation, in the book of Revelation, John actually writes that the world comes, there's four different times that the world comes to the end, that everything is destroyed. And the reason for that is because John, the purpose of the book is to be encouraging. And John is saying over and over again, hey, God is powerful. God is on his throne. The right's going to win. The evil in the world, the bad stuff is not going to win. Stay strong. Stay faithful. Everything's going to work out. That's what John is saying. And that's the genre. That's the type of the writing. So sometimes we think that it's really weird. And it kind of is from our perspective today. We don't have animals with lots of eyes on it. Just the imagery is kind of strange. But it wasn't strange for them. They would, just like today, if you picked up a book that didn't have a cover on it and you open it up and you hear something about lightsabers and blasters and things like that, what kind of book are you reading? Science fiction. There you go. You know, if you open up a book that doesn't have a cover on it and it has a lot of dates and a lot of historical events and things like that, what is it? It's like a history book. It's a textbook, something like that, right? Yeah. So they would pick this up and they would know what that was. And for them, their struggle, like I've kind of been saying here, is they're struggling where they needed to have encouragement, and that's what this book is about, is encouragement, is to believe that the good was going to win out, that God was going to win out, because it was looking like their friends were dying, they were losing their businesses, things felt like in the here and now that things were going badly, you know, and they needed a reminder about what this Christianity stuff is all about. And for us, sometimes we get, when the bad stuff happens in life, and our temptation isn't typically to give up and say that the evil stuff is winning against God, kind of thing. Our temptation is to say that there is no God, or I'm angry at God, or God doesn't exist, or God doesn't make sense, or maybe God doesn't care. These first century Christians, they wouldn't have thought that way, but that's the way that we slide. They slid this way, we would slide this way, but the same thing. We all need the same thing. We need this kind of encouragement when we're going through the tough times of life, and we're wondering, where is God in this? Is the right going to win? Does God really care? Is God hearing my prayers? And what John is saying to us and was saying to them is that the right wins. That what is good and what is beautiful wins the day. And that will have the final word. And hope will win. And I want to tell you, when we say hope, and we're talking about hope today, I think it's good to think about this word confidence. Confidence in God. Confidence that in the Bible that hope and faith, those kind of things are just, they're stuck together. And that's, and they're so linked to this word called confidence. So we think when you're confident in something, it's more like when we say hope, we think, oh, I'm hopeful that whatever will happen. I don't know, but I'm hopeful that you know, I'll have a nice cake for my birthday or whatever, you know. But being confident, you know, when somebody's walking with hope, we don't really say that, but when somebody's walking with confidence, there's a difference in the way that they're walking through the room. You know what I'm saying? So, hope and confidence, those are really very, very similar in a, from a biblical perspective. And so, John is wanting to build up their confidence and build up our confidence. And there's two parts of this text. I'm going to read part of it again. So at the end of Revelation chapter 20, let's look at this message of hope. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who was seated on it. The earth and the heavens fled from his presence, and there was no place for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which was the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the book. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And each person was judged according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into a lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death. Anyone whose name was found in the book of life, who was not found in the book of life, was thrown into the lake of fire. I don't know if that strikes all of you as like exciting and encouraging, but it's a little intimidating, right? And that's good, because it should be intimidating. This is kind of what's happening. God, at the end of all things, God brings everybody together, dead and alive, and Judge opens up the books where everything is written down of everything that we've ever done, and everybody is judged. And it looks like publicly we are all, you know, we're all kind of exposed and judged on based on what we've done and what we've thought and all that kind of stuff. Intimidating, right? There's a little consolation that I feel in there that, you know, I'm going to have all my stuff laid bare, but so is Tim's. So, that we're not in this by ourselves. But the part that we feel uncomfortable about this is because sometimes we think that we don't want God to ever look at that stuff. That we don't want God to care about what we do. You know, that the God is just too graceful. You know, we talked about this time a few weeks ago. That God is just too graceful to care about what we do. But actually, that's not really what we want. We don't want to live in a world where right and wrong don't matter, do we? And we actually don't want a God that doesn't care about right and wrong. We just want a God that doesn't care about what we do and right and wrong, you know? But the good thing here is that God cares greatly about right and wrong, and God also cares about grace. And so it is intimidating, and it should be intimidating and challenging to us to live right and to live in such a way that we, when we stand before God and stand before God's grace and God's judgment, that we can walk there with confidence, knowing that we are not perfect people, but that we have leaned our life into following the way of Jesus. It should be intimidating. And it should be challenging for us, and the decisions that we make, and the words that we use, and the attitudes of our hearts. And it should challenge us to be more and more like Jesus, because right and wrong matter. And to these people, John was writing this to people who were living amazing lives. They were giving up their property to make sure that they fed the poor, and the rich people became poor. The poor people gave everything that they had to see that God's dream was real in this world. They loved their enemies. They prayed for those who persecuted them. And they were living amazing lives. And so they were, and yet they were getting killed and felt like killed for it and losing everything for it. And everybody else was following God's based on what those gods did for them in the here and now. And they were thinking, maybe this system isn't working. And they needed to hear that God does care about what is right and wrong, and that God knows when these people are taking my wife and children away, and when these people are doing bad things to me, and that God cares about this. God isn't distant and far away and amoral. God cares about this stuff deeply, And so it's a challenge for us also to care deeply about these things. And here's a... I'm going to read the second part and then go back and touch on the other part again. So the beginning of chapter 21 says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea," which was representative of chaos in their literary world. "I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'Behold, I am making all things new.' Then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.'" God is making all things new. In the last part of chapter 20, an amazing thing happens. God throws death and Hades into the fire, into the lake of fire, which is the second death. Death, we know what that is. And if death is destroyed, there is no more death. And then Hades, that is the an ancient Greek time. That is the place that you went for ongoing suffering. And a lot of times in our kind of sometimes the Christianity understanding mindset that we have is something that has flowed from Jewish Jesus through the ancient Greek world, picked up some of that mythology and understanding, and then kind of flowed through time to get to us. And so Hades kind of mixes sometimes with our idea of hell. And Hades is a place that you go where there's eternal torment, there's demons that are torturing you and things like that. A lot of fire and nasty place. What the Bible is saying here is that death and Hades, the symbol of eternal torment, that's over. That's gone. And that there's this new heaven and there's this new earth. And this old order of things that John mentions, this is this old order of things, this is in our world, there's a scarcity, you know? There's a scarcity of time. Gosh, I wish I just had more time to spend with so-and-so. If I had more time, I would love to read all these books. I would love to do this whole world of scarcity, it's gone. That's the old order of things. This new world, this world that I love how C.S. Lewis talks about, that we were created for this, because it's like all of our lives that we can get really close to the good things of life, but it's like there's this glass there, and we're like pushing up against this glass. But we can't become a part of it. We see beauty, but we can't really. We want to take it in and it become a part of us, and us become a part of it. And we see things being made new, but we're not made new. And we want to see the morning and feel the newness of the morning, and that be a part of us, and us be a part of it. But there's something that's just kind of holding us back. And those parts of us that are that he's talking about, he's saying that is our longing for this other world, this world that we were created for, and. And so just like we have longings for water when we're thirsty, and we have longings for food and things like that, we know that we can know that these things exist because you don't desire things that don't exist. And this is our, we were created not for this world, but to live in this other world. And this world without limits, this world without scarcity, where there's no end of songs to be sung and songs to be written and people to spend time with and oceans to cross and mountains to climb and things to explore and discover, it just doesn't end. We live in this very finite little globe with limited time and limited space, but that's not the world that God lives in, and that's not the world that God is inviting us to. We were meant to live in that world. And the Bible tells us, and then John is telling us, that some of us will. That what once was will be again. I missed something that I really wanted to say a little bit earlier on, that that kind of our the way that we live out our Christian faith, that that it does matter, and that these two things, when you really start reading the Bible, that faith and works are really inseparable. I can't say that it kind of works like it's all through the Bible. And it's really crazy. Sometimes people talk about it as if it was just in the book of James, but it's in John, and it's in books of John, and it's in the Gospels. And you can't read Jesus' stuff and think that Jesus is here and doesn't care about the way that we live our lives. That I can't say that I love Carrie and cheat on her and be faithful to her and be unfaithful to her and be nasty to her and not spend time with her. I can't. Then you would say, no, Nathan, you don't love Carrie. You are not actually married to her. You are a terrible husband. You don't care. You know, and we know that stuff. And yet we want to pretend that we can say, yes, I love Jesus, and I'm following after Jesus, and you know our attitudes and our hearts and our intentions and our whatever things, they don't line up that way. You know, it's like you know, it's like we just want to have this golden ticket, you know, and it's totally separated from the rest of who we are and the way we live our lives. But Christianity, it's a way of life. It is, and I think sometimes that we've forgotten that. But I don't want for us to forget that. We are called to be a different people. So how do these people's story end? These people that John is writing this book of encouragement to, this letter of encouragement. These people held out hope. And they held on to the hope, and they paid the price a lot of times, willingly, because they knew this was not the end of their story. They knew that when the Roman soldiers came for them, and when the people came, they robbed their place, and there was nothing that the cops were going to do about it because they were Christians. They knew that when they went through that stuff, they still had hope because, you know what, my treasure isn't here. My life doesn't end here. And you might take away I might die here this day, but my life isn't over because I'm a child of God, and I was called, and my heart is in a distant land. It is in another place. And they lived into that. And they lived and they died into that reality, into that hope. And they followed that confident hope into God's good kingdom. And when they did that, it changed the world. Because when you see people that are living into that different reality and you're doing stuff to them and you see them going through some dark stuff in their life, and they go through it so differently than anybody that you've ever seen before, and so differently than what you ever would have imagined you facing a situation like that, it makes you stop and it makes you wonder, what do they know that I don't know? And it changed them, and as they were following this sign of hope into God's good kingdom, it brought light into their world, and other people started changing too, and other people started following the sign of hope into God's kingdom. And these people, they believe that you can't, as a Christian, you can't, most of them believe that you couldn't own slaves, and so they would even buy slaves and sell them out and set them free, you know, and pull their money, and that everything that you were given is for God and for God's people and to give away. And they lived into that, and they shared their grace and hope with other people. And they lived so differently that it changed the way that other people lived. It became contagious. And it ended up changing all of Rome. And all of this happened because they knew, they clung to this hope, that that's not the end of their story. But what would be the alternative for them? And the alternative for us when we're going through these dark places in our lives? Despair? Giving up? Anger? Being angry at God? Being angry at other people? Being angry at your situation? Some people call this realism. Hey, I'm not being pessimistic. I'm just being a realist, you know? Like, those are the people like, I just know how it is. I know it's bad, or I know it's kind of mediocre or not good, you know, and I don't want to be a fool and think things are going to happen that aren't going to happen, you know? Like, I'm a realist. You need to get your head checked, you know? but there's three things that kind of happen with us when we give up hope. And this is the other option. I mean, we have both of these, so in any of these situations, we can choose either one. But these are three things that can happen when we choose to give up on hope and on confidence in God and God's good story. We can become a part of the problem. In our anger and in our despair, a lot of times we either give up and we don't take the opportunities that are given to us, or we actually lash out at people around us and become a part of the problem. Like, well, you know what? That's how riots happen. You know, like, well, hey, the whole world's going crazy. I'll take this stuff too. Hey, they're all beating these people up. I'll get on that. You know, or man, everybody. This is the way everybody has treated me. And the world just is a dark and crummy place, and I'm going to be dark and crummy. That's one. The other thing is that you might not act out on a whole lot of this stuff, but despair and giving up on hope, it feeds the dark sides of our souls. And so it might not come out as much in all the things that you do, and you might not totally join in on the bad stuff. But it will change who you are. You're feeding into the fear and the anger and the hate that is inside of you, and who you are becomes a dark person. And the third thing is that it closes us off to anything good. When we give up on hope, when we are hopeful, we are walking around with our eyes wide open, saying God is in control, that no matter what happens to me, that I know how the story ends, that I am destined for this other land, and my God is also a God of history. And so you have your eyes open for hope and for possibilities. When you give up on hope, you've got your eyes open to negative things and bad things and all that kind of stuff. And so you miss, when you give up on hope and you despair, you miss out on opportunities that you could have, that God is trying to throw in front of you. Have you guys ever seen this movie called Bruce Almighty? Yeah. You know, when he's like, God, give me a sign. And he's almost ran over by this truck full of signs. And he totally missed it. He was despairing in that moment. You know, and he was angry at God and frustrated. And God was trying to send him these signs. And God is all the time trying to send us signs. God is all the time trying to get through to us. But we have to hold on to hope. And we have to open our eyes, which opens our eyes. These are the things that happen when we give up on hope and when we despair. That's kind of what I did in this whole Billy's House situation. I got up, and what ended up happening is there's this one guy named Alan that I was that befriended me, and then one day Alan started becoming friends with these cool people that were much higher up on the totem pole than me, and I thought Alan betrayed me, and I had been so angry for so long. I beat Alan up. You know, and I started doing this stuff. I became part of the problem, and I know it's kind of silly, but we do this. You know, like, I mean, it's silly in seventh grade kind of stuff. You know, but maybe, but it's. But we do that, you know, and it wasn't until then that I saw how ugly I had become. But how about you? How about in your dark moments? Who did you hurt? Maybe it was somebody that you loved. Maybe it was somebody that was innocent and didn't have it coming, you know? Maybe it was yourself, you know? That you turned all this frustration and this despair towards you and on the end, towards inside stuff, you know, and you became the person that you beat up, and you became the person that you hated and that you gave up on. And maybe it was God. Maybe you were wanting God to come through for you in a certain way, and God didn't, and this here and now didn't live up to your expectations, or things didn't work out the way that you wanted to, and you became angry at God. And that's who you lashed out on. And if God was somebody that you could grab a hold of and beat up, that's, you would have it, you know, because you were angry. And you told God what was for you, wherever he was, you know. When we lose sight of how the story ends, when we give up hope and when we despair, we either make peace with what we hate or we join in on what we hate. But we are a people of confident hope, and we will follow hope into God's good kingdom. So whether you are in a dark situation now or there is one down the road from you, hold on to hope. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, when it is dark enough, men see stars. I'm sure women do too. But the beautiful thing about this is that in the darkness of those hopeless situations, that those clinging to hope shine the brightest. It's not when everything is great in the world and things are great in your life that people are like, wow, she's really a child of God. She's really a Christian. She is really clinging to God's hope. She's living differently. What's different about her? What does she have that I don't have? I know if I was in her situation or his situation, I would be different than she is, and I would be different than him. It's in the dark situations, and it's in the darkest part of those hopeless situations that those who cling to hope shine the brightest, shine like stars in the dark nights. It's in those dark situations that people most clearly see that we are living into a different reality, that we are following the light of hope that they can't see, but they want to. As you lean into hope in those dark situations, people will see more clearly the light that others, the light of that other world that is shining through you. They will begin to see what you will see. That your heart and your eyes and your vision and the direction of your life is set on this distant land and on this other world that you were meant to live in. And people will begin to see that through your eyes. We are a people of confident hope because we know how the story ends. Walk in that hope this week and give hope to those around you. Let's pray.